Hello, this is Suzanne Smith-Nash. I'm really happy to be here today. And I'm with my good friend and acclaimed poet and playwright, Rochelle Owens. And I'm here on behalf of Texture Press, talking to her about the Aardvark Venus. So welcome, Rochelle.
Thank you for inviting me, Susan. And I'm very glad to be here today.
Oh, that's wonderful. So first of all, what exactly is the Aardvark Venus?
It's a new collection of poems which contains new and selected poems. The poems, the early poems, date from 1961 and the more recent, 2020.
Right in the middle of the pandemic.
And what's interesting, you did mention the pandemic, it certainly contains references to the pandemic.
Well, that's true. I know that there's one poem that was written in 2020. I think that's entitled Our Ruinscape. And I always thought that it was about the pandemic.
It's not solely about the pandemic, but it definitely contains a very desperate, inevitable, terrible end for, I would say, for the subjective experience of one, as well as the ultimate chaos of destruction. That's why it's called Our Ruinscape. Instead of landscape, it's ruinscape, which is a very final declaration without any kind of discussion or argument against it, against saying, no, it won't be a ruinscape.
That's pretty scary. Can you read a little bit for us?
And in this poem, I realized that I use an archetypal image of apocalyptic, the skeleton of a horse.
It's so sad.
It's more than sad. It's almost prophetic and medieval and final.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, I think about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and then
exactly.
So, well, please read.
Our Ruinscape. On the cover of a science magazine, a rare image, disturbingly informative. You stare down, pursing your lips, your neck to the side, plagued by doubt. A hologram of the skeleton of a horse. I must not jump the gun. The rapt reader stands in the space of an enigma, the hidden contours of raw data. Under a dead blue glow, a laboratory technician observes a configuration of microbes rapidly zigzagging. Zigzagging microbes in a petri dish. Colonizing, dispersing, precise, methodical. Biological compulsion. Oh, Maggie, you wrecked my bed and kicked me in the head. Oh, Maggie, you wrecked my bed and kicked me in the head. The love of logic, the logic of love. I must not jump the gun. Zigzags of black lines, circles, triangles, rectangles, subatomic particles floating on a computer screen. Molecular, the art of nature. Amorphous, the forms, corkscrews of white smoke. Blinking in and out. the spiral tail of a comet. Charred bits of the rat's thigh. A dog gnawing a bone. Earth yields dandelion, yields lemon trees, moisture and nutrients, a flow of hormonal forces. Amorous, the greedy seed, craving, licking, nectar, milk, mucus, rhythmic, the ecstasy, carnal, spiritual. Leaves and limbs spreading, undulating, on multiple screens, spreading, undulating. Digital images. The body of the tapeworm, folding, folding into itself, undulating, segmenting, blowing kisses along the digestive tract, folding, folding into itself. Undulating, segmenting, earth, air, fire, water. An outline shapes itself, playful the unborn babe in its amniotic sac, carnal, spiritual. Morning to evening, evening to morning, under the mask. A smell of decay. Eyescape, earscape, ruinscape. Your bulbous tongue hangs like a drape over your lip. The pulsating fissures rapidly zigzagging. Zigzagging fire ants. Each maps. Zigzagging fire ants, each maps of wrath and anguish across your martyred blood-packed tongue. End to end across the triumphant 21st century, out of the digital age. Through the gaps of your fingers, the mute eyewitness sees hanging in the sky the skeleton of a horse. The skeleton of a horse, appear, disappear, eyescape, earscape, ruinscape. Oh, Maggie, you wrecked my bed, then kicked me in the head. Oh, Maggie, you wrecked my bed, then kicked me in the head. The love of logic, the logic of love. I must not jump the gun. A laboratory technician draws a circular mark, passing her hands, measuring, counting, dividing, numbering the bones, skull, neck, spinal column, yellow the bones, laid out like stage props. One for the cat chasing a rat, one for the dog gnawing a bone. The universe contains everything that exists, biomorphic, geomorphic, polymorphic. Earth, air, fire, water. The universe contracts, expands. Every day bears the data. Disease, famine, torture, war. It is at dusk when, through the gaps of your fingers, you see peculiar forms. When an outline shapes itself, appears, disappears. The stump of a tree splits, vertical, horizontal. It is at dusk when, through the gaps of your fingers, an old woman on horseback appears, disappears. When through the gaps of your fingers, the mute eye witness, sees hanging in the sky the skeleton of a horse. Appear, disappear. evoking the rhythm of spontaneous changes. Dead cells. Dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Totem and taboo. Totem and taboo. Totem and taboo. Work is a binding obligation. Blood in, blood out. Rays of solar light pass through the dome of your skull, rows of cadavers. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Flashes of solar light illuminate prehistoric forests, rows of cadavers. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Rays of solar light pass through layers of water. Layers of water, rows of cadavers. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Rays of solar light pass through a barley plant, rows of cadavers. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Beams of solar light penetrate volcanoes, glaciers, deserts, rows of cadavers. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Rays of solar light spiral into a mushroom cloud, rows of cadavers. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Beams of solar light, beams of solar light break down concrete walls, rows of cadavers. When every dawn, each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Rays of solar light burn through plastic particles, rows of cadavers. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Flashers of solar light split the sea of plastic particles. Rows of cadavers. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Beams of solar light snake dance into plastic particles, rows of cadavers. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Beams of solar light break up dwarf storms of plastic particles, rows of cadavers. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Flashes of solar light spiral through plastic particles, rows of cadavers. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Rays of solar light pass through volcanic hills, illuminate a single blood-stained feather. When every dawn each day, dead cells clothe and feed the flies. Out of the scientific explosive realm, the triumphant 21st century, out of the digital age. Every day bears the data, black letters spell RuinScape.
Oh, wow. Thank you. So this is the last poem in the series, in the collection, in terms of chronology. But they start in 1961. And so that brings to mind, has your reason for writing changed since 1961, or actually in the 50s when you're first writing?
Well, I think that throughout life, any person, including a poet, confronts and learns about themselves in their world, on the planet, and the creative impulse is informed and excited by the reality of one's existence. And so at any time, whether it was 1955 when I was writing poems, to the present, the world crashes into my mind. I crash back out of my mind. And the poem happens. The expression, creative must sing or talk or dance or act or play an instrument in response to one's existence.
Well, and so the nature of your poetry has, in my view, not changed that much since the early poems that were published in this collection in 1961. And I'm always reminded of the Greeks who had a name for poets, and that was Vates. And they were considered to be filled with divine wind or divine breath. And the idea is that they were sometimes considered even madmen, but they were highly visionary, and they responded to that divine breath or wind in the way that they had to.
Absolutely. And of course, we must include women poets who have been women painters who have been invisibilized. But if we use that word, humanity or man, it is the logic of the alphabet. But of course, it's inclusive.
Well, right. I mean, I certainly didn't want to make it seem like there's just one gender. But
no, you didn't.
The Greeks had that word vates, which actually encourages the kind of going into a state as though one can be an oracle. And in many of your works, including your plays, I see that sort of oracular energy.
Thank you for bringing that out, because I like to believe that the prehistoric writers were the shamans, of today. There is that authority that they speak. They will speak in the voice of the god, the gods. They will have that comfortable and flamboyant and challenging and demonstrative mad authority over the language, the word. And that's why they can say, in the voice of a god or the god or gods, behold, pray, dance, live, and die, in the voice of the commanding divine authority or the shaman.
Well, I think that's exactly why over the years some people have felt uncomfortable about your work, because in it you are essentially saying, I am an instrument, and that's not something that everyone likes to acknowledge, that people can even be instruments.
Certainly, Emily Dickinson and William Blake carried forth, demanded and commanded the language to yield to their idea of creating a configuration, a voice, a demand, representing the collective mass of the people that they were coming out of.
Yeah, and that's a great tradition. I mean, I think of Christopher Smart and Jubilate Año, and the way that he, in the 18th century, just experimented and explored different ways of bringing together science and language and fragmentation. And I think about your work and interest in science, and you can see it in this poem, but also in others. And I just wonder, how important is science to you as you go into like the poetic state?
I believe that, of course, science is neutral. The modernity, la modernity, the modern world utilizes science, and science will continue because it is an expression of the developing world, or the multi-world. We no longer live just on the island or in the world in the terms of our group, because of global communication. First the telephone, now the internet, the radio, all the media makes one giant clubhouse where humanity is testing its perfection or desire for perfection in the realm of technology, in the realm of since the Industrial Revolution, science continues. And great vehicles which intend to go to the moon or other or the planets look like lovely, immense, intimidating, artistic, muscular metal constructions. It is art and function, and it will dance on the moon because of the inventiveness of scientists.
I love that.
Of the world.
Yeah, I love that. And the other thing, too, that comes to mind when you talk about globalization or the global, as you say, clubhouse or playhouse or whatever, that through communication, in reality, you also talk about that creates tiny bubble worlds where people isolate themselves and put themselves in little echo chambers so they don't have to listen to other things or ideas, and your voice is designed to rip those walls out so they have to hear each other.
Thank you. There is this hermetic insular desire to reinforce other people's who share your own bad, one's own bad ideas. A desire to say that my, when I say my, I'm speaking for the particular group, that my information is not sheer ignorance, when really it is sheer ignorance. But these individuals in our world, in the Western world, all over the Eastern world and the entire planet, superstition will reign. Morbid, terrible customs will reign. Misogyny will reign. Exclusion, etc. All the bad opinions and judgments will remain. It is not rational nor stoical. But the mass of anger and distortion will remain. Hopefully the ocean as a metaphor, will clean it up and transform it into life-giving, the cycle of life-giving, affirmative reality. But I fear it won't. I fear that with the technology, needless to say, the nuclear energy and massive arms of destruction, that an apocalypse can very well happen because of the competing desires of everybody having the nuclear bomb. On the other hand, I disagree. It's hopeless for these people to say, oh, let us ban all nuclear weapons, because they won't lay down their arms peacefully. And what is it, unilateral, does that mean everybody?
Right. Yeah, so I see what you're saying, and I think that in your work it may have a bleak element, but there is also the sense of rebirth. And I think that when you go to the great tapeworm in the cosmos, it's really a process of rebirth and regeneration, and it's a metaphorical as well as potentially literal.
I believe the life force is there, but the higher creatures, rightfully so, want to get rid of certain life forces, like the life force of vermin. It is not healthy for the higher mammal, elephants and us, to be attacked by venomous microbes that have an urge to reproduce, but no communication with us, as far as we know, except to inhabit us and destroy us. So what do we do with the microbe? Yes, the microbe is the dangerous microbe is an enemy to higher forms of life, from the snake to human beings. The dangerous microbe exists. Its energy should be acknowledged, but we need not and ought not to protect it and not encourage it. I think there is a metaphor in that too.
Oh, definitely. Well, it's been really a pleasure to speak with you today, and I want to express the hope that you continue to write, and I look forward to what we see next.
Thank you so much, Susan. It was a joy talking to you. You're a wonderful interviewer.
Thank you.